Welcome to the Startup Lunchbreak Podcast. I'm your host, Pearl, and in each episode, we are going to unpack key insights, expert advice, and success stories to power up your startup journey. Let's make your entrepreneurial dreams a reality.
Okay, let's just dive right into the session. I really like to just start with some introductions, right, before we just get into the questions and the conversation as a whole, right? The topic for today is how to attract investors for your next round, right? So a brief introduction. So my name is Elton. I am the lead strategist at Startup Launch Code, and Startup Launch Code is a growth studio for startups in Africa, where we help them scale moving from point zero to point one. And we just have these Twitter Spaces sessions just to share insights, bring together founders, VC, just to share insights and help us have great conversations, really. So the topic for today is how to attract investors for your next round. And we have three awesome speakers today. And let me just go ahead to introduce each one of them. So I will start with Thabo, right? So Thabo Nkalo is the managing partner and CEO of 8 Season Capital, a South African-based firm that focuses on providing investors access to emerging investment strategies in VC and social impact fund across Africa. He boasts of over 21 years of extensive investment management experience in financial services and entrepreneurial expertise across South Africa and the entire African continent, right? And beyond his corporate journey, Thabo has demonstrated his entrepreneurial acumen by founding and nurturing emerging investment ventures. And this hands-on experience he has endowed him with a comprehensive understanding of the intricacies of the financial services sector and a keen insight into diverse products within the African market. So once again, Thabo, it's really nice to have you on board. Thanks for accepting the invitation. Thanks for being a part of this session. All right. Awesome. So let me go right on to our next speaker. So our next speaker is Adebowale Banjo. And Adebowale is the CEO of and co-founder of MyCover.ai. And MyCover.ai is an insurance company whose goal is to make it accessible insurance to everyone through product innovation and technology. And he is a consummate professional with experience in business development, strategy, and business analysis involving both startups and growth organizations. And before starting MyCover.ai, he was the head of business development at Mall for Africa, an e-commerce platform where he led the company's expansion plan to Ghana and Kenya. And his previous work experience includes stints in banking, telecommunications, and consulting. Debo, once more, it's really, really nice to have you on board. I'm really glad you accepted the invitation to come on. Awesome. So let me just go ahead to introduce our last speaker. I see Keshni is now a speaker. So yeah, Keshni Morar is the founder and managing partner at Investable, a business consulting company that specializes in crafting dynamic programs for early stage entrepreneurs, visionary investors, and vital support organizations. She is an influential figure in the tech startup ecosystem and a true champion of founder empowerment. And she has over two decades of executive leadership experience. Keshni has proven to be a remarkable mentor and angel investor who personifies excellence and success.
Hi, Elton. Hi, Thabo. I'm going to butcher your name to my fellow speaker. Adebowale? I hope I got that right. But one has to learn.
You tried. It was a good try. But just
it is a good try. I'll learn. I'll get it. Thank you for having me. And good evening to the founders and others on the call.
All right, awesome. Okay, that's great. So it's really nice to have you guys on board today. So let's just dive right into the conversation for today. So yeah, like I said, the topic for today is how to attract investors for your next round. So typically, startups are fast-paced. They like to, they see an opportunity, they go for it. And yeah, so my first question for today is, and Debo, please, I'll be starting with you, then I'll go to Tabo, then Keshne. So I really like want to like get insights and thoughts from like each of the speakers, right? So the first question is regarding the funding landscape in Africa presently, right? So I just wanted us to like just share our thoughts about like the present funding landscape in Africa. Debo, please, we can start with you.
Thank you, Otin. So I would say that the funding landscape in Africa is one that is evolving, and some would even argue that is maturing, and that's a number of reasons for it, right? But I would stick with evolving, because just a few years ago, what we had seen was a lot of investment coming in into the continent, primarily targeted at fintech and fintech products, and also spreading into other verticals like health tech. And we've also seen insurtech participate as well. But you know what we found was a lot of VCs were betting on the opportunities on the continent and maybe the founders, but with little or no insights as to the nuances on the continent. But more recently, we found that with the learnings of the past few years, there's a little bit more, depth in terms of what is required to raise. There's a little bit more due diligence. You know, founders have to prove themselves a lot more now than they had to a few years back. But however, what is important to note that the opportunities still lie in Africa. And investors are still willing to fund, provided that, you know, the business makes sense, the founders are grounded, and of course, everything else aligns. So for me, it's still, you know, day one. There's still a lot to learn and to evolve into. And perhaps what I would also add is we've also now found a lot more African investors as well coming to the space, and, you know, may not have as much funds as the guys abroad have, but they have that edge in that they understand the market. Some of them were even operators or founders themselves and have been able to make exits or have just transitioned into something else. And they are able to not just drop money, but provide advice and support for founders who are trying to build. So I'll say it's an interesting time and one that offers a lot of potential for the space.
All right. Thank you very much for that, Debo. So I think one major thing I picked from what you said is the African ecosystem is not just maturing, it's actually evolving, right? So we've moved from where VCs were just betting in opportunities in Africa without like having like insights into the nuances of the market to now like having more understanding of the market and like doing their due diligence properly. And we've seen that evolvement over time. All right. Thank you for that. Tabo, I don't know if you want to like just chip in there. Please just confirm I'm pronouncing this name correctly.
Yeah, no, Tabo is fine. I think you're pronouncing it perfectly well. So thanks for that. So just in terms of the funding, African funding landscape, what you're pretty much finding is, you know, Africa is not isolated from what's been happening across the globe. So one of the biggest things I think we've seen over the last, 2 years or give or take, has been this, call it funding winter, as it's been called, or this VC winter, meaning that obviously funding or the days of call it cheap money have kind of ended from that peak we saw in about 2021 and 2022. So in as much as I think we've seen a slowdown in funding across the globe, that's also affected Africa as well. So if you look at the peak in funding in around 2022, Africa was attracting about, you know, just under $5 billion as a whole in startup funding. And if you look at the end of last year, that number had fallen to just under $3 billion, you know, about $2.9 billion in funding. So you can kind of see that there has been a slowdown in startups raising funding. And secondly, you're obviously finding that that's also on the backdrop of what's happening in the rest of the world. So that's the first point, I think, what's been happening in terms of the current landscape. But I think as was stated as well, I mean, Africa has been growing in startup funding or VC funding for quite a long period of time now, if you look back at a decade. So there has been a slowdown. However, we're still seeing quite good growth and I guess a little bit more maturity in the funding ecosystem. Still dominated, obviously, by the big four countries. So Nigeria, Kenya, South Africa, and Egypt pretty much dominate the rest of the funding, or at least the funding in Africa. In a market like in West Africa, for instance, you do have other players like Ghana or Senegal, but they are pretty dwarfed by what you see in a market like Nigeria. So overall, I think you've got a growing ecosystem. You've got a lot more maturity that's coming into the ecosystem. You also have a lot more funds, VC funds, particularly focusing on Africa. And it's a mix of funds. Some of them are domiciled in Europe, some of them domiciled in the US. In other parts of the world, and of course, an increasing number also domiciled in Africa. Also seeing a lot more funds coming up, raising sort of their second funds, pretty large funds that have come to deploy, or at least looking to deploy in this environment. So overall, I think it's a pretty exciting ecosystem. It's a pretty growing ecosystem. Lots of great startups. Obviously, there's been a lot of focus on fintech, I think was also stated a bit earlier. A lot more focus now we are seeing around things like clean tech, agri, and sort of the other sectors outside, call it SaaS, B2B SaaS, and fintech. But I mean, a very rapidly evolving ecosystem. And just as a last point, I mean, if you look at where the money's been coming from, if you, for instance, you look at 2013, about 35% of funding came from investors based in Africa. About another 30% came from investors based in North America, and call it 23% in Europe. So you can kind of see that the money is coming from various parts of the world and finding a home in Africa. And so it's quite important as a startup or a founder to look across various markets. You know, look across America, look across Europe, and look across funds in Africa as well to raise funds. So maybe let me stop there. I think we can get into the meat of the numbers. But generally speaking, those are the kind of figures that we've been seeing. A bit of a slowdown. However, I think it's a great time to start getting in, because I think there might be a bit of an uptick in funding going forward.
All right. Thank you very much for that, Thabo. And I think I really agree with you in terms of funding landscape being that it's growing. And since the start of the year, we've seen like that slowdown in fundraising, and over time, we are seeing that shift from a focus on fintech to into other sectors also. Thank you for that. Keshni, I didn't even want to add something on that. I would appreciate
they
it.
They just stole the show, didn't they? Thank you, James, for leaving like not much for me to talk about. But there's one thing I think to add on to what the James have said. You know, the challenges in accessing funding is it's prevalent, seeing the downward slope in the last 2 years. We can see valuations coming down dramatically in line with the rest of the world. I always sit here and I say, you know, I wonder why we thought we wouldn't follow suit to the rest of the world, right? Considering that the US were the largest investors in Africa prior to 2023. And so for me, I think the one thing that was also startling and continues to be a shocking fact is that less than 1.3% of funding that on this continent goes to women. And I think that's what we need to also focus on. It's yes, there's some funding coming in, but also that in terms of the balance and the representation, we're seeing a very, very skewed, I'm going to say bias towards male or diverse male founded teams. And so that as much as is it a stat, we need to understand and unpack over the long term or very quickly why that is the case and what are the biases involved in that. And I think that's coming to the forefront with many of these programs that are coming up, so you'll see that the challenges in the ecosystem regarding access to funding and access to education, etc. The ecosystem is maturing. There's various initiatives on the go. People need to get involved. They need to understand. They need to educate themselves. They need to join the right spaces and places and accelerators, etc. In order to grow, it's no longer a big hype. The fundamentals matter. Tava just said that right now, and it's crucial for us to understand that going forward. But I know we're going to jump into that in a bit. So thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for that, Keshni. So I think my next question, I'll just go ahead to start. I'll go ahead to start with you so that you can share your thoughts first on that. Okay. So right. So over to my next question. So this question is regarding what makes a business attractive to investors, right? So investors in VCFM have like individuals in those firms. And to be honest, I feel like a startup needs to have like a number of things done properly, right? But then I still feel like some VC, some investors, some angel investors have like some specific things that actually attract them in a business. I wanted to know your thoughts on that. And to be honest, I think I saw a tweet recently about an investor talking about how he really doesn't just invest in the idea, but then he invests in people. Keshni, please, let's start with you and hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, sure. So when we always, as investors, receive pitch decks, right? And these pitch decks, usually investors would spend no less than 3 minutes or no more rather than 3 minutes going through it. So the decks that we receive need to have the fundamental information in there. We want to see the market size. We want to see the founder's understanding of their market. We want to understand whether there's a product market fit or a route to that at least. What are the different competitive advantages and what is the defensibility of that business that they are proposing and seeking funding for? That is over and above, the team. So the team is quite fundamental. Julia, many investors say, I will invest in an A-class team with a B-class idea versus a B-class team with an A-class idea. That the team strength and the coherence of that team and the gelling with investors is quite important. Traction, we always hear traction, and I think traction is used very loosely, so it depends very much on the stage you're at. So understand at the very different stages, what does traction mean and what are investors looking for in your sector as an indication of traction. For example, I met a founder this week, and she was saying, no, we've got 2,000 downloads. To be honest, nobody cares how many downloads you have. The investors want to know how many people are using your app, how many people are paying for it, how often are they on it, and what's the stickiness around it. So you need to understand to think about the longevity and the scalability of your business. So if you're on a dating app that is related to marriage, the person's going to be on there until they get married and that's it, right? Whereas Tinder is a very different profile of people where there's longevity and a longer probably lifetime value of the customer. Also, what is quite important, and you may never know this at the very early stages, but it's understanding what the exit potential for these businesses are. And I know it's often very difficult for a founder to quantify that or even fathom that, but it's important for the investor to see that there's some sort of potential, exit potential at some point in time that's not 15 years down the line, but maybe 3 to 5 or 7 years down the line. I'm not going to take up everything, but the last thing I want to say, scalability is very, very important. Sorry, two more things. Scalability is extremely important, and we want to see how you are going to do that. And it comes in various forms and ways. In your deck when we first see that. And then the last thing is governance. And we normally get into the governance portion during due diligence, but making sure that governance is in place from get-go. From the first day of operations, we think that we don't need it, but we actually do. So understanding what governance means in your business and how it applies and why investors are looking for it is quite important, because it's a protection for yourself as the founder, your business, as well as the investors that are coming in. I am going to pause there to give my fellow speakers a chance as well.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. I think I grabbed most of what you said. So you talked about how investors quickly scan the pitch deck of founders and some major things that they should get right are things like the due diligence, the governance comes here, the scalability, the exit potential, and the need to showcase traction. Tabo, I think you can go ahead to speak and share insights into this also.
Yeah, look, I think Keshen is really covered. I would say the absolute or the a big majority of what kind of VCs look for or investors look for. But I think obviously the governance issue that Keshni touched on at the end, I think is also becoming a lot more important. I think we've seen a few more, or at least a few blow-ups in Africa, you know, from a governance perspective. And as a sort of a nascent young ecosystem, you want to kind of build more confidence. And we don't want to see any kind of blow-ups and so forth, you know. So I think governance is becoming important, especially where you have a funding drying up as it has over the last, call it, year, 18 months or so. So that's important. It's also important, I think, if you look deeper into the matrix of what we'd want to measure. You know, I don't want to go into the you know, get too technical, but you know, things like what your customer acquisition costs are, what the, you know, lifetime value of customers and business, you know, things like your net dollar retentions, you know, there's so many things like what your recurring revenue is. So all those metrics, I think, are very important to keep an eye on as a startup when you you engage with investors. I think it's also important that you have a clean, at least fundraise process. And by that, I mean, you know, things like, you know, having your data room organized, having your, you know, all your documents well organized. I think those things are really important that, you know, as investors, we'd look at. You don't want to start engaging with a startup and then only to find, you know, they don't have their registrations in order. They're perhaps not legally set up the way they should be. They don't perhaps have policies around, or at least, for instance, like contracts with their staff and so forth. So all of these things, I think, are important to round up over and above what Keshni already mentioned, you know, in terms of what their business and the team is about and the market. So there are all these other smaller things and softer issues that that investors look at to kind of see whether there's a fit. And I think finally, it's important to talk about the mandate. You know, every investor has a mandate and every investor knows what kind of sector or stage they invest in or you know, whatever vertical they invest in. So it's also important for there to be a fit between the investors or the venture, the VC funds and the startup itself. So I think that alignment has to be picked up from the very beginning. You know, we meet a lot of startups who just sort of spray and approach a lot of funders without, you know, taking or at least taking time to understand what their mandate is. So, you know, aligning yourself as a startup with the mandate helps to drive your ability to kind of raise as well.
All right. Thank you very much for that, Tabo. So I got most of what you said. So in terms of, you really stressed on the importance of governance. You talked about how it's important for founders to know their metrics. You talked about having like a clean fundraising process, you're having your data room set. And one thing that really stood out for me would be what you said regarding every investor having a mandate, right? Where sort of like the investor founder fit comes in. And Debo, I really wanted to like just share your insights regarding this also. But Debo, before you go ahead, so I think I just wanted to add sort of like a sub question, if I can call it that. So still speaking on the things that attract investors. So I get that there are like a number of things that need to be in place, right? But do you feel like there are some things that matter more to some investors? Just speaking from the fact that investors are humans also, or am I wrong in terms of thinking that sometimes some investors look at some things more? Debo, please, you can go ahead. And I really hope you heard my question.
Yes, I did. It's just a tough act following, you know, these two after all they shared. you know, but I'll try to take this more from, you know, and I think that when it comes to things like this, it's really important to break it down so people can understand and relate to it from an experiential point of view. And what I've always said is we need to look at investors as, you know, people who not only want their returns, but also deserve it, right? Granted, you know, there's this general acceptance that investors know that not all their portfolio companies will do well. They're expecting that 1% or 10%, depending on how they are positioned, to, you know, cover for the rest. However, everybody should strive to be that 1% or that 10%. And for me, you know, they've talked about traction, they talked about governance, and given what that has happened, you know, all that has happened in the last couple of years, particularly last year and this year, you know, the need for governance has been heightened. However, I think that from a founder's perspective, we need to understand that fundraising in itself is not the business, right? That the business is building the solution or the product that you set out to build. And that investors are just co-pilots on this journey. So first is understanding what you're trying to do. I find that a lot of investors are attracted, and I think Thabo mentioned this as well, are attracted to founders who know their stuff. So you are not just trying to, I mean, granted, you won't have all the answers. There might still be a lot of unknown elements, but you are grounded, right? You have either experience in that field, or you have a team that does, or you have enough, right, to prove to them that you are the one that is the right fit to solve the problem. So it's important to know your stuff. Secondly, it's important to also be clear in your communication as to what you need. I find that a lot of founders just take money from anyone and everyone without really asking themselves, how else would this investor help me? And when there's a mismatch between, you know, what your true needs are beyond cash and the source of funds, then there's a problem, right? That might even affect how you build the company. It might affect the experiments that you are allowed to run and the outcomes of those experiments. So as founders, we really need to take this seriously and look at it beyond the money. First, do I know this stuff? Am I the right person to solve this problem? And is this investor right for me? Right. Not every investor is right for you. They might have cash, they might be able to write a check, but how else are they going to help you? Right. So you really need to answer that. And in terms of do some things matter more to some investors? I believe so, right? So for instance, there are a lot of investors that are like very heavy on ESG and things like that. And if your organization is not tailored in that regard, everything else might align, but they might either say no or try say yes and then try to get you to align in those regards. Increasingly now, we're starting to see things around, and I think Keshi mentioned it, you know, gender balance, you know, female founders, females in your management, in your leadership. These things matter more to some people. It should matter to everybody, but unfortunately, it matters more to some people, and you know that reflects in how they invest and where they invest. So that's what I'll say, so that we can move on.
All right. Thank you very much for that, Debo. The major things you said that I think they are really important would be in terms of fundraising not being a business, and know for a fact that investors want returns, but founders should also have the mindset that they actually deserve it. Speaking of how there is this conversation about how minority of the investments bring about majority of the returns, right? So yeah, let me just go ahead to the next question because of time. And Debo, I'll start with you this time. And this next question is regarding just in terms of a number of founders that want to raise or are presently raising. We might have some of them on this call. So what do you think are like some of the mistakes that they actually make or they are making in this particular process, and how you think they can better address it and really move forward? So yeah, I'm going to start with Debo, then Keshni, then we also hear from Thabo. Debo, please, you can go ahead.
Well, there's a lot here. How do I deal with this? So I'll try as much to, you know, address as many points as I possibly can. So I think in terms of the process of fundraising itself, maybe I speak first to the process and then maybe to the business. So the process itself is that a lot of founders do not do their research, right? So if you consider fundraising and some kind of relationship. So you're trying to woo a girl, or you're trying to date, right? Or you're trying to get married. You really want to get some information about this person. And I think a lot of times founders don't spend their time. And I made that mistake initially too at the beginning, you know, trying to talk to everybody who sent me an email. I was just ready to jump on a call. And what that means is that you spend a lot of time talking to so many people, but you're not sure if they're writing checks at the moment. You're not sure if they're aligning, if their objectives, you know, aligns with yours. So I think founders need to spend as much time to first say, okay, look, if I have a lead, I need to understand where this company is in terms of their fund. Do they have money to write checks now? And that's not to say you shouldn't talk to people, but you need to understand where that conversation is going. So I had conversations with people knowing clearly that they were not going to invest in this round, but if I wanted to raise a Series A, they would be glad to join. And I needed to add them to my, you know, investors update and send them updates. There were those that I spoke with because they were trying to close their round and wanted to invest in another 4 months. And so they just wanted to find out if I could hold space for them. So it's important for you to understand all of these dynamics, that not everybody you talk to is ready to write a check. And so you also know how best to manage your time, particularly, you know, without losing focus on the main purpose, which is building the business. So that's the first thing I'll say on the operational side. The other thing is, a lot of founders also go into this not being prepared in terms of, you know, what are the things that investors would want? What are the things that will make it easier for them to make a decision, right? So they ask for your data room, but it's not properly populated. You don't have enough information. You don't have a stack of, you know, partners or customers that they can talk to. So I think that the more prepared you are, the easier it is for you and the investor to be able to make a decision whether it's a yes or no. And so that I would say those two on the operational side of things. And then on the business side of things, I think that founders should not. So first thing is valuation, right? I think that's where, I think I even saw a tweet about it maybe today or yesterday where someone said, you know, you don't have an MVP, you've not done anything, no traction, but suddenly your company is worth $10 million. On what basis is that, right? And we got away with it, you know, a few years back, like I mentioned, and I think Dambo and even Keshni touched on it. But the market has changed, right? There's a lot of attention now to the substance behind the business. So founders should not just be focusing on, oh, getting the highest valuation as possible, but they should ask themselves genuine questions. Where am I with this business? And the one way, and if valuation is really important to you, the one way to get there is to actually put in the work. So the question is, how far can you go by yourself before you try to get an investor? Right. So, you know, just not doing a nice pitch deck and saying, oh, let's go raise 200K or 300K or $1 million and we are worth $15 million because you have a nice pitch deck, right, is try and get as far as you possibly can in terms of product development, possibly customer acquisition, possibly beta testing, whatever it is, as far as you can, you know, try and get that. And then it makes it easier for you to show your results to your investors to say, okay, we only did this in the last 2 months. We've been able to either launch an MVP. We have a waiting list. We have people who have paid us this X amount of money. So I think it's important for founders as well, you know, to spend that time building the business before they go to talk to people. And always look at this. If someone came to you and said, oh, I need to build this fancy thing and there's really nothing on ground, would you give them your money as well? And I think perhaps the last thing I would say with regards to the mistakes that people make is sometimes people go and overpromise, right? Yes, I know that you're trying to impress the investor, but you also want to be real. You want the investors to be able to trust that what you say, you mean it, and they can, you know, bank on your word. So don't go there and say, oh, you know, where we are now, if I just get this in the next 6 months, I'm giving you the entire continent, when you know that is not the case, right? What happens with that is when investors investigate your claims and they are found to be lacking merit, then it makes it difficult for you not just to raise from them, but before you know it, that becomes something that begins to circulate, and then you might really have a problem. So I'll stop there, Helton. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Debo.
as you were talking about overpromising, I just remembered a video I was watching today where Vusi Tumbekwayo talked about how every founder's pitch deck is predicting that they'll be profitable in the next 6 months. And I like how you just broke it down. I like how you broke it down into like the mistake in the process and the mistake on the business side. Keshne, you can share what you have for us.
Yeah, that's always hilarious. I've never seen a bad business case, to be honest. So, you know, it just goes over, like, we need to emphasize, we need realistic projections, because I, like, 99% of founders go, I'm going to grow by 20%. But you know what, how are you going to do that? All your data has to tie up, right? And so fundamentally, if you got that wrong, everything else doesn't matter. If you don't understand your market sizing, where you're playing, it doesn't matter. There's so many weak things that could come through just on your pitch deck where it immediately kicks you out the door. It get like basic stuff where investors see this all the time and people will go, no, but you don't understand my market. But actually, investors do understand because they see this over and over and over again. So think of it as like riding a bicycle or driving a car. The more you do it, like you almost go onto autopilot when you're behind the wheel, right? It's the same with assessing pitch decks, assessing deals, right? And so with that, even yes, we're going to get our misses. We may miss a few things, and that is like having an accident, but that happens. It all depends on telling the story, providing the relevant data, making sure that you are prepared for those questions. And I'll give you an example. This morning I had somebody send me their pitch deck. I've got 5 customers signed up and we're looking for funding. And I'm like, okay, what are those 5 customers worth? What are you doing? What does your market look like? Basic questions. And when they go quiet, you're like, okay, you don't know how to answer this, or you don't have the information. Just be open, be transparent. Don't try and make fake FOMO. Fake FOMO doesn't work. Because once it gets into the crux of it, and everything will start unraveling very, very quickly. So for me, that I think over and above, I'm going to try your name again. So if I butcher it, please tell me. Adibowele. Bow. Yeah. Is that right? Adibowele.
That's fine. Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna get your name. Adibowele. Okay. So I'm gonna get your name.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. Yeah, so for me, like, he's mentioned these things. It seems like no matter how many times investors say these things, founders seem to not understand it. So there may be components in there where founders need to kind of go and get that education. And when I say education, I don't mean you have to go sign up for a course. Like, you don't have to go to varsity for these things. You need to get exposure to other people in the industry, speak to investors, and build the relationships, right? Have the conversations. I see many founders using it as a very transactional way. And, you know, building relationships with investors is so important, because so they may say no now, but they might actually like what you're doing, and they may want to monitor. They may actually think about, okay, I see this founder is really trying. They've got potential. They are coachable. I'm willing to open up 1 or 2 avenues, test it out. And then maybe a little while later, come in with a check, right? So don't try and be, it's fine to go out and find the investors and connect and things. But if you find the investors are in where you, with investing in where you are, keep build the relationships. Also, don't underestimate the value of building a relationship with an investor who's not in those circles, because they may know somebody who will invest. And I think that's something that most founders fail on. The other thing also is when founders start this fundraising cycle, they don't quite realize that once they're in it, they are going to be on this continuous cycle of fundraising every 18 months. And it takes anything from 9 months to a year to close a round. So you already have to prepare 2 rounds in advance. So understanding your runways and everything that we just spoke about in terms of projections, etc., need to be reasonable and it needs to be well thought out. And everything needs to be aligned to the operations in your business, your product development roadmap, what's happening in the markets. All these things have to connect. And so it doesn't have to be 100% correct, but it needs to be defensible. Because life does happen, things like no one thought COVID would ever happen. I always, as a strategist, used to say doomsday might be looming and we need to prepare for it. But I never imagined in my life doomsday would be COVID and a full world lockdown, right? And so many businesses thrive during that time, but there are some businesses that, and I own some of these businesses that failed because of COVID and things out of my control. And I had no recourse from that. So understanding those sorts of things is quite important. Also, when you're starting out, many people think they've got great ideas. We all have great ideas. Don't get me wrong. It's all in the execution that matters. And so if you are a first-time founder or even a second-time founder, go to like Founder Institute, for example. Very structured, very thorough, helps you think things through fast, right? And they help you get to market quickly, but they also help you fail quickly. And in failure, there's a lot to learn. And founders think that this is a bad thing. It's really, really not. And I know I'm using this very generically with all founders, but I was in that pot as well. I always felt bad. I can't fail. But you know what? My best learnings are from failure. As long as I knew what not to do the next time around or how to adjust, it's quite important to know that it's okay to fail. And it's okay to fail 10 times because it might be the 11th time that you come right. So embrace that and don't give up because people may not see your vision. But if there's a pattern and there's a trend and it's large enough to say, you should not go on, listen, right? Because sometimes the market actually does know what they're talking about and the people in the investor sector do know what they're talking about. Don't chase pipe dreams if it's not going to end up in anything. And the only way you're going to know whether it is going to be something or not is by conducting that initial due diligence on your customer base and your potential customers, which is called customer dev. So I'm going to stop there because I know that's a lot and Tabo still needs to. Sorry.
I was trying to lock my head to make sure I go to all of what you said. thank you very much for that question. I really appreciate it. So you really touched some very important things. You talked about how having a great idea is not just like what you should focus on. Because to be honest, right now, I have several great ideas in my head, but implementation matters, honestly, right? You talked about how it takes a while to close the round and founders should be prepared for that. You talked about how building relationship with investors matter. And founders should be prepared for conversations they're going to have with investors. So speaking about the example you gave us and how, and sometimes I don't know if founders don't just realize that investors actually understand the markets from both a microeconomic standpoint and a macroeconomic standpoint. So yeah, thank you very much for that, Keshni. Tabo, I don't know if you want to chip in some things regarding mistakes or...
Yeah, look, Elton, I think both Keshni and Devu covered everything in detail. Awesome. I'll be looking at my list here and everything has been stretched off. I think the only thing maybe just as the last point to add is I think one mistake, I mean, I think the issues around valuation have been covered around relationships with funders, starting that early and building relationships, I think is key. But I think one of the things funders don't typically do is look for alternative funding sources before they consider raising. So things like, raising non-dilutive capital is quite important. So in terms of thinking outside the box a little bit before rushing to raise money, you know, what can we do to kind of raise capital without having to dilute ourselves? I think those kind of questions, some founders don't ask themselves deep enough. So it's a little bit like, I mean, when I like to sort of tell founders, look, you know, put down a list of, you know, 1 to 10, and at number 10, put down raise external funding. And between 1 and 9, think about what else can we do to not raise money, but to get capital into the business. You know, so all of those ideas, I think, things like getting customers to pay in advance. There are so many other ways to raise capital without needing necessarily dilutive capital. So I think that's probably the only other thing I'll add. And maybe last thing as well is on the VC side of things, It's important, I think, that founders also understand when VCs are deploying. So when they have dry powder, as is commonly called in the industry. So it's important if you're looking to raise money, you know, keep your eye on or your ear on your eye on what's happening in the sector as well. You know, which fund is has just closed, you know, either the second or third fund, etc. So if you look, you know, currently funds like Partech, you know, have raised $200 million and they are currently deploying it. So, you know, these are small things that funders need to know. You know, P1 Ventures, lots of other funds have raised a lot of capital over the last 6 months. So not knowing, I think, as founders and not following these trends, that does hurt. And I think it's important founders just get on top of that as well.
Thank you very much, Tabo. And you actually raised points. Okay, Keshni, please go ahead. Sorry for interrupting you.
No, sorry for interrupting you. But I want to add to what Tabo is saying is also the fact that, you know, founders go out and raise and they don't have a team behind to run the business. Raising is a full-time job. It takes you away from the operations. It takes you away from your customer. And you need to be the investor relations person with your potential investors. So when you start this fundraising process, make sure that you have the right systems, people, and process in place. It goes back down to fundamentals because your time is going to be so sucked up in, you know, pitching to investors and investor meetings, which you should be having 3 to 4, if not up to 6 investor meetings a day over a period of at least 3 to 4 months, just in pitching. And so that's, and you know, to get quickly to the term sheet round, etc. And in that as well is you need to ensure raising money requires money to raise. And I want you to be clear about that because you do need a tax person on board. You need a financial person on board. You need a funding advisor on board. And you need a lawyer on board. You should not get into this without understanding that those people, each of those play critical roles. And you need to build those relationships with these people as you grow. Because they may actually walk the entire journey with you and into the next, you know, into the following funding rounds. And so I see many, many founders actually lose their companies because they miss the fundamentals of fundraising. So I'm going to stop there.
Thank you very much for that. Founders actually lose their companies because they don't have like a good idea of the fundamentals of fundraising. So there is something that Tabo said, and Debo also talked about it. So just to rephrase what Tabo said, he talked about how founders should not rush to dilute their business by raising external capital. And speaking of what Debo said, so Debo talked about how founders should just go as far as they can go before getting investors' money. So I have, there's this mentor of mine, a VC here in Africa. He says something, right? So Keshni, I just want to like hear your thoughts regarding this quote or this mindset regarding fundraising. So he says something, and what he says is founders should see VC money as a life support, right? They should only raise when they really need to. So Keshni, what do you think about viewing VC money as a life support?
VC money is not life support. I totally disagree with that. So I say you need to raise funding when it's time to scale, when you know exactly when you and how you can deploy that money and turn it as quickly as possible. And this goes back down to the fundamentals of your business and how strong it is. Yes, we all need to, we can't always raise non-dilutive funding, which is always kind of your first one. But when you do raise that dilutive funding, know how you are going to structure that implementation very clearly, because I find a lot of founders say they're going to say, for example, apply to their product and improving the product, but they don't have a proper product roadmap in place. And this is more common than you think. You would, like, we say it like it's so nonchalant, but it's so I see it so often in due diligence that it scares me. And they go from one raise to the next raise to the next raise, and they start raising on safe notes and convertibles because they're waiting for a higher valuation. And they don't get to the higher valuation because then they're in this perpetual fundraise and trying to survive. And I've seen companies die like that. So I totally disagree with that. I think founders need to rather focus on customer development, customer acquisition, and getting revenue as their first source of funding.
All right. So I see the tweak you did here, right? So instead of seeing fundraising as a life for support, founders should raise when they need to scale, right? So yeah, I see the tweak here and I agree with that. Okay, that makes sense actually. Please, if you have a question, you can just put this in the chat box, right? And Thabo, I think you want to say something. You're just unmuted.
Yeah, I was just going to add to what Keshni is saying in terms of VC money. You know, I think taking VC money is a long-term journey. It's a marriage. You know, you're gonna be stuck with this VC for seven, eight, sometimes even longer, kind of years. You know, so I think it's certainly not just call it an emergency or a backstop or what have you. It really is. When you take VC money, you should take it knowing that you're committed. And also that there's value add you're getting from your funder. It's not just a check you're getting. You know, it could be opening up of networks, opening up of markets, and so forth. So the relationship it should be a lot deeper than simply looking at it as a lifeline or some sort of temporary kind of funding. So it is a journey, and VCs add a lot more value than just or they should actually add a lot more value than just providing capital. So that's another point I just wanted to just add quickly.
Right. Thank you very much for that. And I think Debo also touched a bit on that when he was talking about the investor founder fit, right? So not just going for the money they bring, but what they bring aside the money. And I think I have like several other questions I want to ask, but then we have like this time constraints. I want to ask questions about pitching. I want to ask questions about due diligence. But then, so I think I'll just put it this way, right? So if you have like final advice for founders regarding raising, and please, if anyone has any question, you can just put this in the chat box. So yeah, so for our speakers, the final advice you have for founders regarding fundraising, regarding or for their next round, right? So Debo, I'll start with you, then we'll go to Thabo, then finally we'll hear from Keshni. So Debo, please, you can go ahead to speak.
So your question is my final advice to founders?
Yeah.
I think I'll just reiterate what I said earlier, right? And it aligns with what Keshni said and Thabo, of course, which is you really need to think about this before you get into it, right? You, like Keshni said, you only should take money when you want to scale, right? Or you know, when you've actually found something that works and you want to make it grow really fast, right? So for us, for instance, before we approached any investor, we're already making money, we're cash flow positive. We were doing a number of things well, and we just felt, okay, it's time to double down on this and try and do this at scale. And that's when we started talking to investors. So I think that founders, like I said, should try as much as they can to go as far as possible with what they already have before engaging investors. And also, my second advice would be true to yourself, right? There's no one-size-fits-all solution in this space. You need to be true to yourself. There's that element of your peculiarity that also helps in your story, that helps in your journey. And so as much as we want to learn from others and see what has worked elsewhere, we also need to be true to ourselves and play to our uniqueness and our strengths as well.
All right, thank you very much for that, Debo. So reiterating what you said, founders should go as far as they can before getting investors' money, and highlighting the importance of being true to yourself, and likewise, you cannot be false to others. Thank you very much for that, Debo. Thabo, any like final advice for founders regarding fundraising?
Yeah, look, I think I'll be quick. It's really just to reiterate what we've also spoken about throughout this this call. Things like start early. Things like having to engage investors early, building relationships with various angel groups, investors across there's a whole diverse sort of list of investors investing in the African startup space. So getting to know them, starting early with building relationships, I think that's crucial. And of course, I think what we said as the second point is just know your numbers, get your data organized, get yourself organized, get your governance, your structures properly organized. You know, you don't have to have a board of 10 people, but at least have you know, some support structures around you as you delve into the journey. And I think the last point is just be prepared for the journey. You know, it's going to be a long journey, both just fundraising, and once you have the money, that's just the beginning of the relationship. So being prepared for that journey, being prepared for that long-term relationship. As I said, it's a marriage that you're getting yourself into. So being prepared and knowing that, you know, you are tying yourself in for the long haul is quite important as well. So let me leave it there. I think, yeah, just in the interest of time, thanks.
Right. Thank you very much for that, Tabo. Founders should be prepared for that long journey and know for a fact that getting money for equity is a long-term relationship. If you want something quick, probably go for debt capital. Keshni, you're unmuted, so I think you can just go ahead and share your final advice for founders.
Thank you so much. So I think I'm just going to end on one point, because this could be an entire masterclass by itself for an entire week, or a bootcamp. So there's value in saying no when you are going to raise funding. When something doesn't fit with what you need, don't be desperate enough just to take any deal. You know, there's value in saying no to funders as well. And also be careful who you approach, because they are people who want to do good and want to invest, but there's also people who would want to take advantage. So understand that, and there's learn to say no in that instance.
Thank you very much for that question. There's value in saying no. Be careful when you approach investors. Learn to say no. To be honest, I think that's a hard thing to do, but it's actually the truth, and founders should learn to do that. So, okay, once more, thank you very much to our speakers for sharing great insights today. I really appreciate the conversation we had. I appreciate the insights shared. Also, regarding this session, so it's going to be uploaded next week, Friday, on Spotify, so that people can re-listen and people can just listen again for the first time. So, yeah, once more, thank you very much for joining, Debo. Thank you for joining, Tabo. Thank you for joining, Keshni. I really, really appreciate you guys. And to our audience, Dawood, Godeye, Sheyi, Oluwapelu, Morendeni, and to everyone that joined, thank you very much. It was a really insightful conversation. And have a nice evening, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, appreciate it.
Well, thumbs down, Elton. Thumbs down. What's a thumbs down? No, what happened there? I mean, come on.
Surprised.
But thank you, everybody, for staying on.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks for the time.
Thanks for tuning in to our podcast. If you found value in today's episode, you can find more at gotlaunchpad.com. Stay inspired, stay innovative, and keep building those dreams. Until next time, bye.